This is Cradle My Heart Radio with your host, Kim Cotola. Cradle My Heart Radio, preventing abortion and helping those it hurts.
This is where the healing begins. Oh, this is where the healing starts. When you come to where you're broken with Him, the light meets the dark. The light meets the dark.
And now, Kim Cotola and Cradle My Heart Radio.
This is Cradle My Heart Radio, and we are all about preventing abortion and helping those that it has hurt. We also have a daily feature that we've launched recently called Cradle My Heart Today, and this tells stories of women who have had abortions and what has happened to them in the aftermath, and questions that we seek to answer questions women have about abortion, not only as a spiritual experience, because it's an issue of life and death that makes it a spiritual experience, but also abortion as a public health issue. We try to cover that on this program because the facts really matter. You know, we can talk about whether it's right or wrong, and of course, if you're a new listener to this program, what you need to know is that abortion is the intentional killing of an innocent human being. Therefore, it is morally wrong. That's where we stand on this program, and we have all of the evidence to back up that that proposition, that premise that we work from. But it's also very harmful to women's health. Of course, it results in the death of a child, so it's devastating to the deaths of children. If we were to look at the deaths of children as a public health issue, we would have to say that abortion has been a complete devastation. If there were anything else that were killing a million children a year in America, we would be looking at this as a public health crisis of mammoth proportions. But, of course, we don't. So we're going to talk about it from a public health aspect today, but from one particular aspect. And joining us to do that is Dr. Joel Brind, who's a professor of biology and endocrinology at Brook College, City University of New York. He's a board member and co-founder of the Breast Cancer Prevention Institute as well. Dr. Brind, welcome to Cradle My Heart Radio.
Well, thanks for having me on. Good to be here.
And we're also joined by Eve Sanchez-Silver, who's a breast cancer researcher and who has spoken in many different venues internationally about the abortion breast cancer link. Eve, welcome back to Cradle My Heart Radio.
Happy to be here, Kim, again. Thank you.
We're recording this interview the second week in February, and I think it's really interesting, Dr. Brind, that Snopes.com published on February 3rd an article with the headline, Are Abortions Linked to Increased Risk of Breast Cancer? And right below a one-line summary of that is the giant red X and the word false. And then the writer Alex Kasprak goes on to present the evidence with lots and lots of research links to make it look very official if you don't actually know what those links say and where they come from, et cetera, to say that the work that you've been doing for the last three or four decades is false. So I wanted to give you a chance to answer this article, but not only that, bring us up to speed about what the research is actually showing us, what the most current research says, and whether or not there is an abortion breast cancer link, because we still continue to see headlines from partisans that say that this is junk science. So this is your chance to educate us about what the research actually says about a link between abortion and breast cancer.
Well, thanks very much for the opportunity. But bringing you up to speed is the first red flag in that Snopes article, because here he goes talking about something that's apparently newsworthy, and he quotes all of these authoritative articles that you have suggested, and the most recent one is 2004. So you might just wonder, why is he talking about presumably a current pressing health issue that he feels compelled to weigh in on, when the latest research that he cites is from 2004, and even in citing our website at the Breast Cancer Prevention Institute, at least he acknowledges that we cite papers as recent as 2013. We could still update it a bit more. But it is very suspicious, isn't it, when it's something about a procedure that is so common and a disease that is so common that there's nothing more recent than 13 years ago? Well, there's a lot that's more recent, and that's one of the things that's very dishonest about the article. There's almost nothing honest in it. So it's hard to sort of catalog where the half-truths and lies and innuendos and misleading statements are. They're everywhere. But the simple fact is that it's not something that is even current by any stretch of the imagination, and it ignores error, you know, dishonesty by omission in this case, ignores an enormous body of evidence that is exploding, largely from Asia, from India, from China. They talk about our website having documented something like 57 studies that show a positive link between abortion and breast cancer. Actually, that needs to be updated almost weekly as studies keep coming out in India. There are over a dozen studies from the last 5 years alone. And the abortion breast cancer link is even more clear. The evidence is even more compelling from a place like the Indian subcontinent, because when you do a study like this, the effect that you can measure, are women who have had abortions more likely to be the ones that get breast cancer? It's easier to see in a population like that, because there you have a population where traditionally women get married very young. They start having children very early. They have a lot of children. They breastfeed all of them. They don't drink. They don't smoke. The only things that give them breast cancer are basically oral contraceptives and abortion. And so the links, instead of showing maybe a 30 to 50% increase when factored into all the other things that can increase the risk of breast cancer, it's really just those factors. And so there's a real tidal wave of evidence that's come out of the Indian subcontinent now, and there was also a tremendous review of 36 studies that came out of China at the end of 2013, which totally blew these claims that there is no link right out of the water. But, of course, if you ignore them, just sweep them under the rug, you can make an apparently compelling case. But, again, mm-hmm. that first red flag, that all the evidence he cites is old.
Sure.
Very old.
Dr. Joel Brind, our guest, and I'm going to play devil's advocate for a moment and ask a question that may, on the face of it, sound offensive. But, you know, since you've engaged in junk science all these years, how do you keep your job as a professor at City University of New York?
Well, that's true. If I did purvey the junk science, they would have thrown me out on my tail. But unfortunately, they can't do that because my science is not junk science.
Oh,
and
my goodness.
That's another thing that was just really one of the outright lies in the paper. He says, the Snopes author says at the end, in summarizing my study, he says that observational studies will always come with limitations and wiggle room for politically motivated players to exploit. But as a whole, I'm quoting now directly, we regard use of these data to make a causal link between breast cancer and abortion without any discussion of their significant caveats involved intentionally misleading enough to be disqualifying, end quote. Well, obviously he hasn't read my paper. My extensive review paper in 1996, which he quotes extensively, he either has not read or is simply lying about. It goes into enormous detail. When you publish my paper, one of the reasons you know it's not junk science, it was published by the British Medical Association in their epidemiology journal in 1996, and it knocks down all of the objections to coming to the conclusion we came to, one by one, very systematically.
The writer of the Snopes article is Alex Kasprak, and his bio reads that he's a science writer into space, fossils, deep time, and obscure historic events that in some way involve a modicum of science. That's a quote.
Yeah, that's sort of like a smidgen of corruption, a modicum of science. You know,
and then he says, I'm sorry, I'm trying to be respectful. He says, based in Los Angeles, he's the real-life basis for that kid Dr. Grant scares with a velociraptor claw in the beginning of Jurassic Park. I assume that's winsome or whimsical. I assume that's not. I don't know if that's true or not. It doesn't matter. The point is, he's not a scientist.
Irrelevant anyway.
The point is, he's not a scientist, right? There's no connection between him and abortion breast cancer research, first of all.
Right. Now, but here's the problem, and you see it all over the place, is that once the politically correct forces that are working to make sure that the only research that comes out about something that's supposed to be safe, like abortion, says that it's safe, once these forces take over the once venerable institutions of science and medicine, the New England Journal of Medicine, the Ivy League schools, the National Cancer Institute, which is the federal agency that basically tells everyone in the world what causes cancer and what doesn't. Once all of these organizations and journals and academies become corrupted, which they are, then they, for example, he talks about the conference in 2003 that was held by the Department of Health and Human Services to establish whether abortion and breast cancer were linked, and they reviewed all the data and said there was no link. Well, they said they reviewed all the data, but that's a lie. They didn't review any data. And if one cares to go to the actual video archive of this National Institute of Health meeting back in 2003, you can see me asking the proponent of the argument that there is no link for the data and being told that it would not be available until after it was published.
And Dr. Brin,
so that's even on the record. You have to look at the record.
That's captured in the Hush film, I think. Is that right?
Part of it.
Okay.
Yeah, actually, the film is the meeting captures all of that right in the film. It was online for a long time, and it's clear in the film that they pretty much refused to allow Dr. Brind to speak up about his findings.
So, in the interest,
or to have access to their data.
Sure.
That's
so,
right.
In the interest of fairness, every once in a while, they will go to someone who's a physician or who has some experience with abortion or breast cancer. One of the people that shows up often in articles that feature your work, Dr. Brind, is Dr. David Grimes, who I think wrote an abortion textbook. I don't know. He's an abortion practitioner.
Yes, he's an abortionist. I mean, that's who he is.
Right.
And that's not a secret.
Right, and he wrote a book that was for the popular audience that came out, I think, a year or two ago, an apologia about how abortion is a net good for society. You know, that's the new party line, is that not only is it not wrong or bad, but it's good. It empowers women and other reasons why they say. And because you can't say that unless you can prove somehow that it's safe, or you can simply cast doubt on those who have proof that it isn't. Right, and so this is what they're doing. But is Dr. Grimes qualified to comment on an abortion breast cancer link?
Well, he might be qualified, but he's also compromised. I mean, his loyalty is to abortion. This is what he does. This is what he promotes. This is what he teaches. He is one who is convinced, almost as a religious kind of devotion, that abortion is something that is good, and therefore he would not admit anything that is bad about it. He's certainly smart enough and well-educated enough to know the evidence, so it's very easy to say, and I would easily accuse him of being dishonest right on his face, because he's not incompetent, because he's not unqualified. So you see, you get into this situation where someone is either completely incompetent or they're dishonest, and you can choose which is which or how much of which is at play. But that's the only explanation, because the evidence is very clear, it's very extensive, and the problem now with abortion and breast cancer, now that abortion has been exported to places like India and China now for so many years, you have now, if you have over 1 billion women in India and China alone, and the incidence of breast cancer due to abortion goes up from, let's say, 2% to 4 or 5%, you're talking about millions of women who are going to get breast cancer, and even who are going to die of breast cancer because they've had an abortion. What's 1% of a billion? You know, I mean, that's 10 million women right there. And the data, and you'd say, well, gee, how come we aren't hearing about all of this tremendous epidemic of breast cancer and its association with abortion in India and China? Well, you have to look at the medical literature, not just Google it, to see what the politically correct crowd thinks is worthy of your attention, but you go into the medical archives, which are also easily available through PubMed, the National Library of Medicine, and you find a lot of articles. You can find all the evidence that's there. You have to look for it. And the problem with journalists these days, and the reason why you can easily call them out for not being real journalists, is because they don't do any investigation. They don't even let their fingers do the walking enough to find the evidence. Because obviously they view their job as protecting abortion. I mean, if you work for Snopes.com and you wrote an article saying, no, you know, there really is a link between abortion and breast cancer, women should know about it, you think that article would be published? You think you'd be working for Snopes.com for very long? I don't
right.
think.
Well, and I mean, that's there's another discussion for a different day, because
yeah, but the truth is not their friend. That's
you're
the
right.
way they,
you're
they
right.
are.
And I mean, I'm saying I want to have that discussion. I'm not dismissing you. I'm saying, wow, it goes so deep. The compromises are so pervasive at this point. Eve, I want to ask you a question. Because you have, and if people need to understand the physiology of this, please go to cradlemyheart.org and look at our archives. Go to Eve Sanchez's material. Go to the Breast Cancer Prevention Institute, and find out for yourself the physiological basis for what we're talking about, that what happens in the budding breast when there is a hormonal disruption that abortion causes. It's very different even than the hormonal disruption of a miscarriage, which happens differently because that's happening systematically, internally, rather than the external force that abortion causes in the hormonal cycles. And it's something you do need to inform yourself about. But Eve, there are many women listening who have had abortions. I had an abortion. I've been very candid about that. Many women have had more than one abortion, multiple abortions. There may be this conversation may be striking a great deal of fear in their hearts. You know, what can we do? If they are getting the message that this risk is real, at this point, what can women do to try to either repair or assure our health going forward?
The important factors for women who have had abortion is to understand that monitoring their health from this point forward, that now that they know, is important. If they're over 50, they should consider having a baseline mammogram, very important, because that lets physicians and the staff that they're working with, at the radiologists, et cetera, understand what their breast condition is at the time of the first mammogram. And this will allow them to compare any other mammograms done to the first one. And that's very important. So it's important to establish that. If a woman is younger, or if a woman is black, the woman should consider having an ultrasound so that she can have a baseline image without having exposed her breasts to radiation, which radiation, we know, increases breast cancer risk. So doing those things matter. Even though the American Cancer Society has said that women should not feel obligated to do breast self-examination, many women do find their breast cancers that way. I did. Many women that I've talked to have also, and I think that that's an important thing to do. Another thing is for them to read what is available to them from reputable organizations like Breast Cancer Prevention Institute, and that's bcpinstitute.org. That's bcpinstitute.org. That's Dr. Joel's Joel Brin's web site, and also they
and
can
it's now,
look
by
at,
the way, that's now run by our president of the Breast Cancer Prevention Institute is Dr. Angela Lanfranchi, who has been a breast cancer researcher and a breast surgeon for many, many years in New Jersey. A very, very, very prominent and knowledgeable.
Right. And both Dr. Brind and Dr. Lanfranchi can be seen in the film called Hush Film. They can find it on hushfilm.com. That film is available for individuals and groups. And the information regarding the lack of information to the public, general public, worldwide, the information is there for them to see, and how that has been hushed up mm-hmm. internationally. That's hushfilm.com. And my website would be pinkmoney.org. And at pinkmoney.org, they can find Dr. Lanfranchi's causal relationship between abortion and breast cancer listed in the six criteria that scientists require are listed there with the answers to the criteria listed by Dr. Lanfranchi.
Our guests are Eve Sanchez-Silver, a breast cancer researcher, formerly with the Komen Foundation. Again, you want to hear the background of that story, go to Eve's website or look in our archives. And Dr. Joel Brind, professor of biology and endocrinology, City University of New York, board member, co-founder of the Breast Cancer Prevention Institute. I want to ask you, Dr. Brind, about this idea that someone can say in the press, well, Brind, he's been discredited.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, whether or not, I mean, that would be factual, wouldn't it? I mean, if your peers had said.
No,
but in
not,
other words,
absolutely.
That
in
could.
In fact, that's a word.
What I mean by that mm-hmm. is we could fact check that. We could say, well,
yes.
Have his peers rejected his studies? Have his peers booted him out of their mm-hmm. professional? I mean.
Right, and those are different. That's the reason why I'm objecting to the word
yes.
Discredited, is because you can have a scientist who's come up with a theory. You know, the history is littered with scientists who've come up with theories and so on, and the theory may be proven or disproven. And that doesn't mean that they've been discredited. Discredited is means they've been shown up to be fraud or phony or incompetent. That's discredited. So one of the things they do is they will use a word like discredited. You have, if the National Cancer Institute says, oh, no, Brind is wrong because of this, this, and that reason, you may say, okay, the National Cancer Institute has refuted it, and now let's bump it up and switch it to the word discredited. You see, as you get to primary, secondary, and tertiary sources, you have my research. Then you have someone who's criticizing my research. Someone in a, you know, in the National Cancer Institute, and then you'll have some modicum of science type science reporter who then throws in a word. Then they up the ante by throwing in the word discredited. See, so this is one of the ways that they amplify the lies that they tell, and basically try to character assassinate people. So first thing they try to do is ignore you. If they can't ignore you, they try to assassinate the character. And that has nothing to do with scientific refutation. You know that in 1938, there was a book that came out that was published by the Nazis in Germany, interviewing 100 different physicists talking about how Einstein's Jewish science of relativity was all wrong. Well, when the book was published, a reporter interviewed Einstein, who was safely in America at the time, and she said, Professor Einstein, 100 scientists, 100 of your peers say that you're wrong. How do you answer that? 100 scientists. You know, they talk about scientific consensus. And he says, 100? Why'd it take 100 if I were wrong? Only one scientist would be needed to prove me wrong. So they throw around this other term called scientific consensus, which is actually an oxymoron, because there's nothing scientific about consensus. Consensus is majority rule. That's a political concept. Science is, you know, it can be an idea that's been around for 1,000 years and somebody comes out and proves it wrong. That's all it takes. You know, I mean, Louis Pasteur was not a consensus when he proved that you don't get spontaneous generation of infection, right? When he proved that you needed to have an infectious agent that could not pass through a certain size filter in order to produce an infection. I mean, it didn't take a consensus of experiments or anything like that. It took basically one scientist, right? Fleming and penicillin. Fleming was not a consensus. You know, after something is developed, then the political organizations follow on. And so scientific groups will then finally come to a consensus. But there is this myth in the general media that somehow science progresses
sure.
from consensus to consensus.
Well,
usually happen that way.
I think that, you know, if it's not character assassination, all they have to do is cast doubt. Eve and I talked about this in a prior conversation. So, yes, ignore character assassination, cast doubt. There's something else that goes on, too, though, and I want to give you a chance to talk about this, which is ascribing motive.
I decided to get into medical research because I was interested in finding out the secrets and curing cancer and heart disease and all of those things, and that is still my motivation. And it was very interesting, though, in this context, when our paper came out in 1996, where we reviewed all the data that had been out since 1957 and concluded that there was a significant increased risk of breast cancer among women who had chosen abortion, there was a big press conference that was held by the Penn State College of Medicine, where some of my co-authors, all of my co-authors actually, were on the faculty. And one of the co-authors, in fact, the number cruncher, the biostatistician who put all the numbers together and came to these conclusions, said that he was pro-choice. I always put that in quotes because that's another misleading term for another day. But the point is, he was not opposed to abortion. And what was really interesting is that not only did that show that the research I put out wasn't even put out by a team of researchers who were unanimously pro-life, but what it showed was that we were honest scientists, because until that press conference, when the school asked us all point blank, they said, well, this is a very controversial issue. We have to know, are you pro-choice or pro-life? And the statistician said he was pro-choice. It was like, oh, that's interesting. We didn't even know.
We are out of time. You can learn more about the Breast Cancer Prevention Institute, as well as the work of both of our guests, at cradlemyheart.org. Dr. Brind, Eve, thank you so much for being our guest today. Stay with us now. Coming up here on Faith Radio, more on this issue and your phone calls as well. We'll open up the phones here at Cradle My Heart Radio.
A safe place to connect with others, finding God's love after abortion. This is Cradle My Heart Radio.
This is where the healing begins. Oh, this is where the healing starts. When you come to where you're broken again, the light meets the dark. The light meets the dark.
Cradle My Heart with Kim Cotola. Join the conversation. Call toll-free 800-811-3003. 800-811-3003.
Good evening. Thank you so much for being part of our listening audience tonight. Thanks for being here. Thank you for listening. I'm Kim Cotola, and this is Cradle My Heart Radio. And our phones are open at 1-800-811-3003. And I have a tough question for you tonight, but I really want to hear from you. And we do have a pro-life resource for everyone who calls with an answer on the air. And that's a copy of Rhonda Barnes' book, From a Mess to a Message. And Rhonda shared her story with us a couple of years ago, I think, now. The podcast is posted at cradlemyheart.org. And I hope that you'll go and listen to Rhonda's story. Very, very encouraging. And you can get the book and read for the purpose of abortion recovery, but also just witnessing her faith and all that God has done in her life. It's a beautiful story from someone who's become a friend. Rhonda Barnes' book, From a Mess to a Message, is our resource tonight, 1-800-811-3003. And what I want to hear from you is, if there was a teen in your life, someone you knew and loved, and you found out that this teen had had an abortion, what would you say to this girl or young woman? 1-800-811-3003. It's a toll-free call, 1-800-811-3003. And the reason I'm asking this is because on Friday, Teen Vogue put out an article that said, what to get a friend post-abortion. The first title for the article was 11 Thoughtful Gifts Your Friend Who Just Had an Abortion Would Appreciate. This is Teen Vogue. So this is teen-to-teen advice. And among the things they suggested was a heating pad that's shaped like a uterus, the Angry Uterus heating pad. 1-800-811-3003. Here's the thing. I know you may not ever hear from someone who is a teen who has had an abortion. It probably will be years before you will find it out, unless you're very close and you're very trustworthy and you're very safe for them to be able to share such a thing with. But if it came to you that someone was in distress after an abortion, or someone needed adult input and support after an abortion, what would you say? 1-800-811-3003. We're going to camp out on this question, and here's the reason why. Oh, I wish I could. I can't find it right now, and I had to when I was scrolling on Facebook this afternoon. There was a story about Leroy Carhart. He is a late-term abortionist, one of only a handful who will do an abortion right up to the ninth month. And he killed a patient recently, allegedly. Someone died having an abortion at 33 weeks. And we won't go into all of the details, but this has happened in his abortion business before women have died. Because it's extremely dangerous to have a late-term procedure. But I was reading, the name of someone I know and am friends with popped up in the comments. So I said, oh, well, let me read through some of these comments. And the comments from people condemning the woman who went for the 33-week abortion were so physically disturbing to me and nauseating that I had to stop, go out into, you know, another room, have a conversation with somebody who I know loves me, and kind of do a mental shower from the hate and vitriol and ugliness of, this was a Christian website, of people saying, justice, she killed, she got killed. People saying, karma. I don't know why a Christian would talk about karma. To me, karma means God zapped you. Or fate, whatever, you know, you want to hide behind. Reaping and sowing in God's economy says you bring consequences onto yourself when you disobey and do what he told you not to do. That's a very different concept than karma. You know, karma says God's going to get you because you did something bad. That is the opposite of the message of Jesus Christ. These words of condemnation for this victim of abortion were so sickening to me. I couldn't deal with it emotionally. It was just really, really disturbing to me because it is so, first of all, so inappropriate, but it also showed me a swath of people who bought into the rhetoric that late-term abortion helps women and women need it. And, you know, they bought into some picture of a woman willfully without any desperation or coercion or advice from a doctor that the baby was going to be a monster or whatever other intimidation and coercion the doctor had employed. Because the story said that, you know, there was a fetal anomaly. Maybe the neighbors talked about monsters. I don't know what this pressure this woman was facing, but that's what I saw. That's what I read into the story. None of us knows her who were reading her story. But people commenting that she got what she deserved. To me, it was like a setback. I mean, I've been sharing the truth about abortion and about what happened to me, not as a victim, as a person who has learned through the grace of God and his mercy to take responsibility for what I did legally. You know, the law is a moral teacher. I was very immature and I didn't reflect on it morally and I was very ignorant. And yes, I took the life of an innocent human being. By the grace of God, somehow Jesus has forgiven me. And you know what? Anybody who wants to condemn the woman who died in the procedure, Jesus has forgiven her too. I mean, I pray she has repented. There were a few people who were saying such things. Where's your heart? And the reason I ask you about a teenager is not only because of this Teen Vogue piece, because the Teen Vogue piece was very breezy. It was very much, you know, it's such a common thing, and man, you might have had to do that. And so here's what you can do. You know, dude, here's what you can do to make yourself feel better. What would you say to a teen? 1-800-811-3003. I mean, I hope that for all of us as adults, I don't think we have a large teen audience, but if you're a teen, that's cool. Call to 1-800-811-3003. I would hope that you would muster compassion you might not have for a 33-year-old woman who had a late-term abortion. I would hope. Maybe a mitigating factor. Even if you're morally outraged, as we should be, about abortion being the innocent killing, or excuse me, the intentional killing of an innocent human being, we should be morally outraged about that. But the idea of stomping on a woman's grave who was victimized by this doctor who made her feel that this was going to be something safe, which it could never be that far advanced in a pregnancy. I'm just shocked. 1-800-811-3003. I mean, part of my point in asking this question is, you know, I think we've got to do better. I really think we've got to do better in our messaging. 1-800-811-3003. So what would you say to a young person who came to you for guidance? Maybe that person wasn't repentant or remorseful. What would you say in order to try to help them understand the gravity of the situation? 1-800-811-3003 is our number, and our resource tonight is From a Mess to a Message by Rhonda Barnes, a wonderful book on recovering after abortion through the mercy of Jesus Christ. And whose word says, don't you know that it is the kindness of God that leads us to repentance? That's what it says in Romans. Not an angry mob who feels safe to yell murderer on Facebook. 1-800-811-3003. What would you say to that teen? I have got to believe that at least a few listeners of this broadcast would have something wise and loving and helpful to be able to say. 1-800-811-3003. Teen Vogue talked about getting some of the right undergarments that the woman might need. Then they went on to post a poem, Milk and Honey by Rupi Kaur. And, an affirming poem. You are resilient. You are extraordinary. Not just pretty. Okay. Then we have The Angry Uterus Heating Pad by Lady Bits Design. Tongue in cheek. There's a girl power cap. And the model wearing it has her back to the camera. And the cap's on backwards. And she's got her left fist raised. And that cap, based on a tattoo, touts an important message that only the Spice Girls could deliver. Girl power, because abortion, right, is supposed to empower you. How would you counter that message to a teen? Teen Vogue is getting the influence here. What would you say? And we need to coach each other. If you don't know what to say, stay with us. Hopefully we'll get some calls here. I mean, I have some ideas, but I want to give you guys a crack at this. 1-800-811-3003. Is there a teen in your life who might be vulnerable and maybe need this message? There's an obscene piece of jewelry. Teen Vogue offers a uterus pin with a middle finger raised. Wear it as colorful armor, it says, so that when some rude jerk asks if you regret your choice, as if that's somehow their business, you won't need to say a word. Snag this for your bedridden bestie and swoop one for yourself, too. The proceeds benefit Planned Parenthood. 1-800-811-3003 is our number. What would you say to a young person in your life? Let's take it down a notch in terms of the pressure for you as the adult. Let's take it down a notch. what would you say to the young person in your life about this article? I would say, you know, wow, I saw something on social media that really caught my eye. Talk about this with me. How do you counter? How do you counter the angry uterus pin that benefits Planned Parenthood? 1-800-811-3003. What's our messaging? Christian elders? 1-800-811-3003. Titus women, right? Our job is to talk to the younger women. Oh, one of the teen Vogue says, sign up to be an abortion clinic escort. Enable others. 1-800-811-3003. We'll take a short break, let you collect your thoughts, and then we'll come back, hopefully with some of your calls. And for all of our callers tonight, Rhonda Barnes' book, From a Mess to a Message, Real Hope for Those in the Aftermath of Abortion. Join us here at Cradle My Heart Radio.
A safe place to connect with others. Finding God's love after abortion. Cradle My Heart Radio with Kim Cattola. Call toll free at 800-811-3003. Seeking to help others find God's love after abortion. Cradle My Heart Radio with Kim Cattola. Call toll free at 800-811-3003.
This is Cradle My Heart Radio, and sometimes we aren't able to prevent abortion. Sometimes girls and women have abortions, sometimes as a choice, sometimes feeling they have no choice, sometimes straight-up coercion happens. But what do we say as God's people in the aftermath? What do we say in a one-on-one conversation, in a kind, inviting to mercy way to such a girl or a woman? 1-800-811-3003. Let's go to the phones. And for all of our callers tonight, Rhonda Barnes' book, From a Mess to a Message, The Aftermath of Abortion. Hi, Amanda. Welcome to Cradle My Heart Radio. How are you tonight?
I'm good. Thank you, Kim. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you. So what would you say if you knew that a young woman had had an abortion, or if you just wanted to discuss with her this Teen Vogue article about, you know, what should happen after an abortion?
Well, you know, if it's something that they've already done, the first thing I want them to know is that God still loves them. God still loves them, and he loves the baby that he created in them, and that baby had a purpose too. But he loves them, and you know, he doesn't want them to let this destroy their lives. You know, he wants to see them start over, and they certainly need to come to repentance. But you mentioned the girl power with the Spice Girls, and, you know, it just hit me. These girls have got a lot of power. They are powerful. These young women, they need to know how powerful they are. And that God has given them free will to make these choices, you know. But he loves the babies as much as he loves them, before, during, or after.
So try to strengthen them. Try to give them hope.
Absolutely.
Show them that they are valued by God and by you, right? That's what we do.
Yes. Yeah, we all make mistakes. We've all fallen. I would not be talking to them from a place of judgment. You know, I mean, bad things happen to everybody, and sometimes we make wrong choices. And it's unfortunate that abortion takes a life, but God still loves them. And it's just so overwhelming. And to get them in a place where they can receive that and know that he's there waiting for them to reach out for forgiveness.
Amen.
You know, if it's after the fact, you know?
Yeah,
if it's before
you.
The fact, they've got the power to save a life.
Right. And so, have you ever had a conversation like that?
Only vicariously, maybe, with people who don't necessarily know that I know what they've been through.
Sure. Okay.
You know, I myself have not had the experience of abortion, but as a young teen, I experienced it with friends. And, you know, it was when I was older that I came to these revelations that, you know, we're still loved. And it just, it breaks my heart that Planned Parenthood has this power over them, you know, and it's so deceptive. It's just so deceptive. And the uterus pin and stuff, that's just such a lie, because God still loves them. And, you know, everybody expresses themselves so differently. And angry mobs, yeah, there's angry mobs out there, but they're angry, and they're passionate about the angry. And you know what? God loves them too. So,
well,
and these young women, they need to be nurtured, and they need to be loved.
Amen.
It's not over.
Thank you, Amanda. Appreciate that. Stay on the line. We'll get your address so we can send you a copy of From a Mess to a Message by Rhonda Barnes. God's love was at the center of what the message of my book was about when I wrote that. For those who don't yet know that God's not angry at you, God doesn't hate you, God's not shocked or surprised. But there's, you know, going to be some work that we'll have to do in our hearts to be able to gain for ourselves all that Christ has already accomplished, you know, in his love for us. And it has to do with accepting responsibility, and it has to do with repenting, which means changing our minds, turning into a different path than the one that we've been on. And I think, you know, Amanda's right. If we had the opportunity to talk with someone beforehand, we try to impress upon her that this is a human being, that this is a human life, and that the consequences will stay with us eternally. Not just in this life, but eternally. And so if parenting is just not possible, because it isn't in some cases, then adoption is a loving option. We have had on this program recently, just in the last 3 or 4 months, some young women who have placed children in open adoptions, and some that are earlier on in the journey than others, but it's a very different scenario than adoption was even, I think, 10 or 15 years ago. Open adoption is a real game changer. And I would be very adamant to be able to be sure that any pregnant teen would know about open adoption. And I would talk with her about what does she need. What is the barrier to choosing life? What is the barrier to carrying the pregnancy through? And try to help her meet that. Try to bring down the fear and raise her hope. Because as one teen mom said to me, you know, her dad supported her, and he said, you don't have to change your plans. You have to change your timing. You know, so she's approaching her educational goals in a little bit different way as she had chosen to parent. Abortion is morally wrong because it's the intentional killing of an innocent human being. Even if we've done it, Amanda is so right. God still loves us. Jesus Christ came to make a way for us to return to God after we've left to do things that the Bible calls sin. God's love is never in question, and it's unconditional for each one of us. But wow, I hope that we are ready. I hope that just even posing the question has given you some good things to think about in terms of what you would say and in terms of how you would counter the message. And, you know, I agree with Amanda that those who are, you know, acting like an angry mob on social media, or maybe even at some of the protests that happened all around the country, I'm not against that. Had I been free to be able to be there, I would have stood in solidarity, because I do believe that it's time to defund Planned Parenthood. There were marches, or I should say demonstrations, at over 200 Planned Parenthood locations. And there were counter protests, and, you know, Planned Parenthood is evil. They're providing abortions, over 300,000 every year, according to their own reports. And they don't deserve taxpayer funding, even in Medicaid reimbursements for other procedures. They're a corrupt organization. So I stand with those who were there demonstrating. But it's a different approach and a different message to a person either heartbroken by abortion or to one whose heart has been hardened by abortion and who may need help to thaw an icy heart. You know, because sometimes what occurs is we steel ourselves to be able to get through it. We flip that switch where the emotions are flipped off. But it's not quite so easy to re-engage emotionally in the aftermath. And no one tells you that beforehand either. So what's required from us, from the wise ones, from the followers of Christ, the ones who have the Holy Spirit within, is to emphasize God's love, to be filled with grace and truth, as John 1 says, Jesus is full of grace and truth, and to love, but never to enable, never to dismiss, never to appease or condone. We have to believe that we have a better story, and we have to tell it every chance that we get, especially to the young people in our lives. Thank you so much for being with us. Remember, Jesus loves you, and so do we. We'll be here next week. We'll see you then.